Reaction to Capitol Hill and the White House today, from President Trump's response to if he would accept a peaceful transition of power should he not win re-election. It's Thursday, September 24th, and this is Washington Today. I'm Pedro Echevarria. More on that in a moment. Speaking of the president, he and the First Lady received jeers at the Supreme Court as they paid their respects to the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg today. And Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin says there is movement between the White House and House Democrats on a coronavirus relief package. That, as the Treasury Secretary appeared before the Senate to make the administration's case. That's all ahead on C-SPAN Radio. But we begin with President Trump's remarks last night at the White House briefing room, which have reverberated around Washington. Here are those remarks.
Right here. Mr. President, real quickly, win, lose, or draw in this election, will you commit here today for a peaceful transferal of power after the election? And there has been rioting in Louisville. There's been rioting in many cities across this country, red and your so-called red and blue states. Will you commit to making sure that there is a peaceful transferal of power after the election?
Well, we're going to have to see what happens. You know that I've been complaining very strongly about the ballots, and the ballots are a disaster.
I understand that, but people are rioting. Do you commit to making sure that there's a peaceful transferal of power?
We want to have get rid of the ballots, and you'll have a very we'll have a very peaceful. There won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation. The ballots are out of control. You know it. And you know who knows it better than anybody else? The Democrats know it better than anybody else. Go ahead.
Mr. President, the second question is, will you...
Please, go ahead. Why won't you ask the question?
President Trump last night in the White House briefing room. The president has been pressing a month-long campaign against mail-in voting this November by tweeting and speaking out critically about the practice. More states are encouraging mail-in voting to keep voters safe amid the coronavirus pandemic. The president, who uses mail-in voting himself, has tried to distinguish between states that automatically send mail ballots to all registered voters and those, like Florida, that send them only to voters who request a mail ballot. This morning, he spoke with Fox News host Brian Kilmeade on his radio program to better explain his point of view. Here's a part of that exchange.
So, Mr. President, yesterday you created some news, as you usually do. One of the things you said when asked about if you lose the election, will you accept the result? You said, well, we're going to have to see what happens. You know, I've been complaining very strongly about the ballots, and the ballots are a disaster. Many think you are saying if you do lose, you'll never, ever leave. That's not what you're saying. We just spoke to Lindsey Graham. He said, We have every reason to contend anything that might be controversial. And I'll paraphrase. He said, if it gets to the Supreme Court and they decide Joe Biden won, Joe Biden won. Do you agree with that?
Oh, that I would agree with. But I think we have a long way before we get there. These ballots are a horror show. They found 6 ballots in an office yesterday in a garbage can. They were Trump ballots, 8 ballots in an office yesterday in a certain state. And they had Trump written on it, and they were thrown in a garbage can. This is what's going to happen. And we're investigating that. It's a terrible thing that's going on with these ballots. Who's sending them? Where are they sending them? Where are they going? What areas are they going to? What areas are they not going to? When they get there, who's going to take care of them? And so when we find 8 ballots, that's emblematic of thousands of locations, perhaps.
But people just get concerned about a constitutional. People get concerned about a constitutional crisis if you or Joe Biden.
Well, remember Crooked Hillary Clinton a week ago. She said to Joe Biden, don't concede under any circumstances. Do not concede under any. Never concede. Okay, now. You know, nobody does a story about that, right? But she said that last week. You covered it.
Right.
And the words were, don't concede under any circumstances. Well, it's okay for her to say that. But if I say, well, I want the ballots to be fair,
right?
They make a big deal out of it. It's not right. It's just the same old double standard.
The president from earlier today, you may recall back in July, President Trump told Fox News' Chris Wallace he wouldn't commit to accepting the results of the 2020 election prematurely. Quote, I'm not going to say yes, I'm not going to say no, and I didn't last time either, close quote. Back on Capitol Hill, many Republican leaders responded to the president's remarks via Twitter today, and here are a few of them. First, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky tweeted the following. The winner of the November 3rd election will be inaugurated on January 20th. There will be an orderly transition, just as there have been every 4 years since 1792. Here's Mitt Romney also weighing in. Fundamental to democracy is the peaceful transition of power. Without that, there is Belarus. Any suggestion that a president might not respect this constitutional guarantee is both unthinkable and unacceptable. House members also weighing in on the president's remarks, including the House Republican Conference Chair Liz Cheney of Wyoming. Here's what she tweeted. The peaceful transfer of power is enshrined in our Constitution and fundamental to the survival of our republic. America's leaders swear an oath to the Constitution. We will uphold that oath. And Representative Steve Stivers of Ohio this morning on Twitter saying this, nothing defines our constitutional republic more than the peaceful transition of power. I've taken an oath to support and defend the Constitution, and I will uphold that oath. Remember, you can find Twitter list of all members of Congress from our Twitter page. All you have to do is just follow at C-SPAN to find our list. On the Democrat side, members were out and about today expressing their thoughts about President's remarks on election results. Let's start with Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer of New York.
Yesterday at a news conference, President Trump refused to commit to the peaceful transfer of power should he lose the election in 41 days. Let me repeat that. Yesterday at a news conference, President Trump refused to commit to a peaceful transfer of power should he lose the election in 41 days. Quote, well, we're going to have to see what happens, he said. I've been complaining very strongly about the ballots, and ballots are a disaster. Pressed further, the president said, get rid of the ballots. There won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation. Get rid of the ballots, and there won't be a transfer. There'll be a continuation. All his words. Get rid of voting. Get rid of the ballots. Just let him stay in power for whatever illicit way he chooses to do so. That's what he's saying. Now, everyone, from school children to the most senior among us, know that the peaceful transfer of power is one of democracy's core attributes. There is no democracy without it. And like the rule of law, the separation of powers, checks and balances, everything we have learned that is great and noble about our system and government, President Trump has sullied, diminished, and now he threatens to actually dismantle. The gravest threat to American democracy right now is Donald Trump. The president issued similar threats in the run-up to the 2016 election, and he's doing it again now. If I win, he said, if I win, he proposed, the election is legitimate, argues the president. But if I lose, it's rigged. That's what he's saying now. Again, if I win, the election's legitimate, but if I lose, it's rigged. Oh, and by the way, I may just stay in office and not count the ballots. Unbelievable. The gravest threat to American democracy right now is President Trump.
And that was Senator Chuck Schumer of New York earlier today on the Senate floor. Going over to the House side, Speaker Nancy Pelosi held her weekly dugout with reporters and addressed the same issue.
Yes, sir. Madam Speaker, do you have an absolute confidence in the institutions of this country to ensure a peaceful transition to the next presidential term, and that if, in some extraordinarily unlikely circumstance, the election were still being contested when President Trump's term ends in January, that he would have to leave office and that whomever is Speaker would become president?
Well, that's an outcome we don't want. We want the peaceful transfer of power. And again, this is about something you've heard me say again and again. We don't agonize, we organize. And we want to make sure that the American people know how important their vote is and how they can vote safely without risking their health. And it is it's very sad that you even have to ask that question. A real testimony to the need for protecting our democracy that we put forth yesterday. But that a president of the United States would place in doubt the idea of the peaceful transfer of power is, it's no surprise, again, because the president has been contemptible of science and governance. And so you see 200,000 people have died. But I have confidence in the American people. And I have confidence that that he won't get away with saying, for example, I won with the popular, the vote on the ground, the vote in the mail doesn't count, and the rest of that. What am I missing here about people not, just not saying, hold it, calm down, Mr. President? Now, we do know who he admires. He admires Putin. He admires Kim Jong-un. He admires Erdogan in Turkey. He admires people who are perpetuating their lead, their role in government. But I remind him, you are not in North Korea. You are not in Turkey. You are not in Russia, Mr. President. And by the way, you are not in Saudi Arabia. You are in the United States of America. It is a democracy. So why don't you just try for a moment to honor your oath of office to the Constitution of the United States. But yes, I have confidence, and we're, it would not be a good thing for our country, for our election to be ignored by the president, so that it, a solution as you, as the Constitution provides for, but nonetheless one that does not, in my view, constitute a peaceful transfer of power.
Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi earlier today at her weekly press briefing, also taking questions from reporters today, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, Republican of California.
Mr. McCarthy, the president has declined to commit to a peaceful transfer of power in the event that Biden wins in November. And I was wondering if you had any comments for
yourself. There will be a very peaceful transition. A concern I have, though, too, I hope you ask the same question of Hillary Clinton, who simply said out there, never concede the race. Or what about our own Congresswoman, AOC, who said we need to radicalize ourselves? Did that have anything to do with two police officers being shot last night, or two being shot, sheriffs being shot in Compton? Did that have anything to do with the U-Haul truck that was staged putting out military weaponry with shields and others to those who want to protest in a different manner? That's a concern that I have right now, our security and safety of the streets. There will be a smooth transition, and I believe President Trump will have a very good inaugural, and we will reunite this nation instead of radicalize this nation.
House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, that's earlier today on Capitol Hill. Well, what does all this mean? What could happen next? For more perspective, C-SPAN's Steve Scully spoke with RNC Chairwoman Ronna McDaniel earlier today for our podcast, The Weekly.
Let me ask you about some news by the president when he was asked about election night. He said, quote, we're going to see what happens. From your standpoint as the RNC chair, what does that mean?
Well, of course, the president is going to accept the results of the election. But I think the president is concerned, as am I, about many of the laws across this country being changed by Democrats that are undermining the ability to get results, allowing ballots to be counted in some cases up to 14 days past election day. And I think these are real concerns that we have. This is why we're engaged in many, many lawsuits across the country. I don't understand why Democrats are systematically, in such an uncertain time with our country so divided, going state by state by state and trying to undermine the integrity of this election and changing laws, especially when Dr. Fauci has said it's safe to vote in person. When you saw in Michigan, they had 1 million people vote in their primary and there was no uptick in coronavirus. Yet across the country, Democrats are undermining many of the processes that have been vetted and tried and true, and I think it will insert chaos into election night.
But for those who prefer to mail in their ballot, do you have a problem with that?
You know, it's a real difference between somebody proactively asking for an absentee ballot, which every state has an absentee process. That's part of the verification, asking for a ballot, versus a state shifting their procedure to all mail-in, mandating mail-in ballots, and sending them to voter rolls that have not been vetted, that haven't been checked to see if people have moved away or passed away. And those are concerns we have, especially in states that don't have the infrastructure to handle that influx of mail-in voting. So those are concerns we've seen in the primaries play out in state in New Jersey, where they now have to redo an election, in New York, where it took 6 weeks to get results. These are precursors to what we think is going to happen on Election Day, as many of these states are changing election laws on the fly without the infrastructure to handle these significant changes.
So to that point, as you know, the president is calling this a Democratic scheme and corruption. So where is the corruption? Where is this happening specifically?
I think it's very concerning to see states like Nevada say, not only are we going to expand ballot harvesting, but we're going to mail not just absentee request forms, but live ballots. We saw a lot of problems in the primary where ballots were literally littering apartment building floors or garbage cans. That leaves uncertainty, and every voter should have certainty in the election process. And Democrats systematically are suing to get rid of things like signature verification, voter ID. They want to expand ballot harvesting, which I don't know how that would be considered safe during coronavirus. If Democrats are saying voting in person isn't safe, why would going door to door and collecting ballots be any safer? So these are things we've seen across the country. States like New Jersey and Montana have pretty much eliminated in-person voting. The president's right to say Democrats are inserting havoc and chaos into this election cycle.
Now, there is much more to this conversation, and you can find the entire discussion between Steve Scully and RNC Chairwoman Rhonda McDaniel wherever you listen to podcasts. All you have to do is just look for C-SPAN's The Weekly Podcast and subscribe so you never miss an episode. You're listening to Washington Today. This is Washington Today. I'm your host, Pedro Echevarria, with some other headlines today. Authorities in Louisville, Kentucky have charged Lorenzo Johnson, 26, with 14 counts of wanton endangerment and 2 counts of assault on a police officer after 2 officers were shot during protest in the city. That's according to Louisville Metro Department of Corrections. The city erupted into angry demonstrations Wednesday after a grand jury decided not to bring charges against the police officers who shot and killed Breonna Taylor during a botched nighttime raid on her apartment in March. The grand jury instead indicted another officer involved in the raid for recklessly firing shots that entered a neighboring apartment. The decision in a case that has drawn widespread condemnation and outrage sparked other demonstrations across the country as well. Ms. Taylor's name has become the rallying cry for the Black Lives Matter movement, along with those of George Floyd and other Black people across the country who have been killed by police. An ensemble forecast published Thursday by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention now projects there will be 214,000 to 226,000 coronavirus deaths in the United States, that by October 17th. Unlike some individual models, the CDC's ensemble forecast only offers projections for a few weeks into the future. The previous ensemble forecast published September 17th projected up to 218,000 coronavirus deaths by October 10th. Over 202,000 people have already died from COVID-19 in the United States. That's according to data compiled by Johns Hopkins University. And today, Facebook outlined its new set of rules for employee communications within Workplace, the company's internal social network. Chief among the new changes is a requirement that employees use a photo of themselves or their initials as their profile pictures. This change would prohibit employees from setting their profile pictures to images that promotes specific political candidates or causes. The new rules come a week after CEO Mark Zuckerberg informed employees about a new set of principles to guide internal debates and conversations. And Facebook's new rules will also expand the company's definition of harassment. The company will prohibit any communication that is insensitive, degrading, or derogatory, and could create a hostile work environment for those in a protected class. As we said at the top of the program, President Trump and his wife Melania Trump paid their respects today to Justice Ginsburg at the Supreme Court, and this is what it sounded like. The president and the first lady could be seen from the street near the justice's casket, and for a few moments of jeering took place, and then they went back inside. At the White House today, Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany addressed those chants, and here are her remarks.
On another note, today at the Supreme Court, when the president approached, was paying his respects to Justice Ginsburg, there were some people in the crowd that started to chant to respect her wishes, to uphold her wishes. Do you have some thoughts on those chants, which also, you know, included vote him out?
Yeah, I think the chants were appalling, but certainly to be expected when you're in the heart of the swamp. I travel with the president all across the country, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Florida, Nevada, and everywhere we go, the streets are lined with support like I don't think any other president has had previously. But with regard to precedent, as I've noted before, 29 times has an appointment been made in an election year, 29 times. And that was all 29 times when there was a vacancy at hand. So the precedent is very much on our side here. And I would also note the hypocrisy of Democrats. Joe Biden saying, I would go forward with the confirmation process as chairman even a few months before an election. Barack Obama saying, fill the Supreme Court vacancy when it was his tenure. And you had Kamala Harris saying as well that Senate GOP is holding SCOTUS hostage for political gain. Join me in calling them to consider President Obama's nominee. So they've really flipped here because the precedent is on our side and their hypocrisy is on full display.
That was the White House press secretary from earlier today. Justice Ginsburg will lie in state tomorrow at the Capitol building. And you can find more on the justice and her memorial services on our website at cspan.org. Back on the Senate side of Capitol Hill, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell and Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin spent another day in front of lawmakers. Louisiana Senator John Kennedy questioned both witnesses over the lack of a new relief bill and the impact it's making on the economy.
Mr. Chairman, what's going to happen if we don't pass another coronavirus bill?
Well, I think the risk is that spending will weaken and that these 11 million and change people, and there are many more than that whose working lives have been disrupted, but there are 11 million in the payroll survey that are unemployed. And some of those are going to have a hard time getting back to work because they work in those difficult areas of the economy. And so they have money in the bank now from the checks that they got and from the unemployment insurance. And I think they'll go through that. And so we'll see sooner or later, probably sooner, we will see that the economy has a harder time sustaining, you know, the growth that we've seen. That's the risk.
Okay. Mr. Secretary, if we in the Senate, along with our colleagues in the House, could agree to do one thing to improve our economic situation, what would you recommend that we do?
I would allow us to spend the $130 billion that's sitting in the PPP, it's money that's been appropriated by Congress, and allow us to send second checks to those businesses that are hardest hit and small businesses.
And that would be your number one priority.
That would be.
That was Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin and Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell speaking earlier today with Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana. According to The Hill, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin said Thursday that he and Speaker Nancy Pelosi have agreed to revive negotiations over a stalled follow-up coronavirus relief bill. Speaker Pelosi said Thursday that she expected negotiations with the White House to resume shortly, telling reporters at the Capitol, quote, will be hopefully soon to the table with them, close quote. The Hill also reporting that Speaker Pelosi has asked committee heads to draft a backup relief package if a bipartisan plan deal with the White House does not happen. You can find the entire Senate Banking hearing at our website at cspan.org. Over in the Senate Homeland and Governmental Affairs hearing, FBI Director Christopher Wray took questions over a wide variety of topics, including the ever-present issue of mail-in voting. According to reporting by Axios, President Trump has ramped up his claims without evidence that widespread mail-in voting would rig the 2020 election against him. On Wednesday, after declining to say whether he would commit to a peaceful transition of power if he loses the election to Joe Biden, the president said that, quote, the ballots are out of control. Director Wray noted that the agency had seen local election fraud, quote, from time to time, and that the agency takes election threats seriously, which he said includes potential threats through mailed ballots. Here is the FBI director, Chris Wray, being questioned by Michigan Democrat Gary Peters.
So my question is very direct. Is voting by mail secure?
Well, Senator, I think what I would say is this. we take all election-related threats seriously, whether it's voter fraud, voter suppression, whether it's in person, whether it's by mail. And our role is to investigate the threat actors. Now, we have not seen, historically, any kind of coordinated national voter fraud effort in a major election, whether it's by mail or otherwise. We have seen voter fraud at the local level from time to time, and so my comment should in no way be construed as minimizing how seriously we take our responsibility to investigate such incidents or the potential impact those things could have at the local level. So it's on our radar. Certainly to change a federal election outcome by mounting that kind of fraud at scale would be a major challenge for an adversary, but people should make no mistake, we're vigilant as to the threat and watching it carefully because we're in right. uncharted new territory. And I think as far as risk assessments of any particular state's processes or systems, I would defer to Mr. Cuccinelli and DHS CISA because that's really more in their lane.
Right. But your answer is clear. You've not seen any widespread fraud by mail, and it's something the FBI watches continuously to make sure that that's not happening.
That's something we would investigate seriously.
Absolutely.
Aggressively.
FBI Director Chris Wray earlier today in front of the Senate Homeland and Governmental Affairs Committee. By the way, you can find this hearing and all of our hearings on our website at cspan.org. Now to campaign 2020 and remarks from former 2016 and 2020 presidential contender, Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont. In his first in-person political event since ending his effort to become president, he challenged President Trump's claims of voter fraud in the November presidential election. Here are his remarks from earlier today in Washington.
What I will be discussing today is the danger that this country faces from a president who is a pathological liar, who has strong authoritarian tendencies, who neither understands nor respects our Constitution, and who is prepared to undermine American democracy in order to stay in power. With less than 6 weeks left to go in this campaign, it is my fervent hope that all Americans, Democrats, Republicans, independents, progressives, moderates, conservatives, come together to defend American democracy, our Constitution, and the rule of law. We must ensure in this unprecedented moment in American history that this is an election that is free and fair, an election in which voters are not intimidated, an election in which all votes are counted, and an election in which the loser accepts the results. This is not just an election between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. This is an election between Donald Trump and democracy, and democracy must win. The United States is the oldest continuous democracy in the modern world. We held elections in the middle of a civil war in 1864. We held free and fair elections during World War I, during the Great Depression, and during World War II. After all of those elections held in extremely difficult circumstances, the loser acknowledged defeat and the winner was inaugurated and took office. That is what the United States of America is all about.
That was Senator Bernie Sanders. Now we are just a few short days away from the first presidential debate. That will be held in Cleveland Tuesday, September 29th. This morning with Brian Kilmeade, President Trump attacked Fox News host and moderator for the first debate, Chris Wallace.
So, Mr. President, let's move on to another area which kind of relates to this. You spent an hour with Chris Wallace, and you spent probably another half hour off camera. It was 100 degrees. You did an hour on Fox News Sunday. Chris Wallace right. is going to be the moderator there. And what role do you think that experience will play in the success that you may or may not have on Tuesday for 90 minutes?
No role. I mean, I've done many interviews with Chris. I have Chris's all-time record in ratings, Numerous times, actually. But I get good ratings when I do, Chris. So Chris likes me because it's all about ratings. Your world is about ratings. If you don't have ratings, you do very well. If you don't, I do you anyway, but you do very well. But if you don't have ratings, you can forget about that business. So I've always gotten very happy. But I have his all-time record by far in ratings. And Chris is good, but I think I would be willing to bet that he won't ask Biden tough questions. He'll ask me tough questions, and it'll show. It'll be unfair. I have no doubt about it. But he'll be controlled by the radical left. That's what they control him because. Yeah. He'll be concerned. I guarantee you he won't. And I have a lot of respect for Chris. I do. I have a lot of respect. His father was actually a friend of mine, as much as Mike could be a friend of anybody. He did me, I think, twice on 60 Minutes, and they were both good, but which was shocking because Mike very rarely did good. I have the honor of having a couple. One was a phenomenal piece, actually. People couldn't believe it.
Well, Mr. President, and that's on YouTube. Mr. President, I will tell you for sure, he is not controlled by anyone, Chris Wallace.
Okay. But well, let's see. Then he's got to ask tough questions of Biden.
But because, that's true. Do you think that
I had it last year where ABC was asking Hillary Clinton these little powder puff questions, and they were going after me. I said, I thought I was debating one person, not two.
And that was President Trump earlier today on Fox News Radio. You're listening to Washington Today.
The piece is titled Two Countries, and joining us on the phone from Pittsburgh is Keith Burrs. He is the editor of the Post-Gazette. And you point out that we really do have a great divide in this country. My question is why?
Well, that's the $64,000 question for sure. I guess this is my sort of simplistic answer. I think we stopped listening to each other as fellow Americans somewhere along the way. And in the last 4 years, we've gone an extra step beyond that and started to actually demonize each other so that, you know, Democrats and Republicans who used to be able to work together in the off season between elections and legislate together are sort of trapped by their bases in each party, and this kind of mandatory demonization. You, if you're Republican, you have to call the Democrats Marxists and soft on crime, and if you're a Republican, you call Democrats that, and if you're a Democrat, you have to daily take the mandatory pledge that Donald Trump is not only the worst president in history, but possibly the worst human being. And that's sort of enough. You don't have to have a platform, and you certainly don't have to reason with people on the other side of the fence. So I just think we've gotten ourselves in this deep, deep division along cultural lines, the culture wars, and it sort of divides geographically. And we really have stopped listening to each other and started to really have sort of full-time contempt for each other. I'm not going to listen to you if you're on the other side. So that's a long answer with a sort of a short theory, but that's my theory.
Well, let me take it one step further, because you say ignorance is part of the problem. And you point to the lack of teaching civics and American history, saying we need to go back to that instead of teaching critical theory.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think instead of theories of everything, we don't teach kids how the government actually works. And, you know, I think we have a president now who doesn't know much about how the government works and isn't terribly interested. I think that the Black Lives Matter movement would benefit from some sort of practical legislative goals. You know, Dr. King, it led to something. It wasn't just sort of endless demonstrations. We got the great civil rights legislation of the 1960s, and that took the practical know-how and practical action of a master legislator who'd become the president. So I think our lack of not only empathy, but understanding for each other and our lack of understanding for the system. I guess I'll give you another example. Ruth Bader Ginsburg what made her great wasn't just her character. She had a tremendous strength of character, but she had a principle that tied everything she did together, and that was the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. And I don't think too many Americans really know what that is. And that's a, when you put this sort of contempt and dislike for one another together with really a lack of understanding of what politics and government are, I think it's really deadly.
And Keith Burris, you are in Western Pennsylvania, which is one of a number of key areas that is ground zero for this campaign between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. So what are you seeing and hearing on the ground? What is your overall assessment in terms of the tone and tenor among the supporters of the president and the former vice president?
Well, this is the perfect place to see the two countries. In Pittsburgh proper, you can drive around the city. I live in the city, and if you drive within my neighborhood or the kind of adjoining four or five neighborhoods near me, you see a sea of Joe Biden signs. If you go 30 minutes into the next county, say Washington County or Butler County, you see a sea of Trump signs. My wife and I were in sort of central Pennsylvania a couple weeks ago, just, you know, vacationing and driving around, and it's all Trump. I mean, you can drive a mile on a country road and see 50 Trump signs out of 60 homes. So we've got that absolute divide, that divide along geographic and sort of culture war lines right here in Pennsylvania. And let's say the election turns on this state, that will turn on, you know, how many Democrats come out in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia versus how many come out in the middle of the state and the sort of the rural counties. But two countries is exactly what we're looking at here in Pittsburgh.
And that is the title of the essay available at postgazette.com. Keith Burris joining us on the phone. We thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
And that's it for today's program. Now, if you've missed any of Washington Today, you can always find it as a podcast at c-span.org/podcast, or you can subscribe to wherever you listen to podcasts and you'll never miss an episode. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope that you enjoy the rest of your evening.